Chapter 19. Mortality. Common needs make for the strangest strangers comrades. Xerxes, Proverbs. Look, I've told you, I cannot help you, John Grammatica said to the word-bearer.
And that is still not an acceptable answer, Narek replied. My efforts to secure you involved a great deal of planning, preparation, effort and sacrifice. I would...
Listen to me, said John. I am the agent of a Xenos power. The Cabal runs me. It owns me. I am here on their bidding, sent to perform a task that has been preordained.
And?
John strained against the ropes that lashed him to the chair. And they are watching me. If I step away from my course, if I defy them and refuse to complete my mission, they will come for me. And you too, if you are with me.
They can try, Narek mused.
They will do more than try, said John. They are quite resourceful and determined. John relaxed and dropped his chin. God knows, warrior, I should dearly love to see Lorga brought down and finished. The galaxy would be a better place for it.
God? Narek asked. There are few true gods anymore, only the demons of the warp that pollute the hearts of men.
And the demigods that men have fashioned and manufactured, John countered, creatures such as Lorgar, polluted by the warp, are only as dangerous as they are because they were already primarchs. Mankind has made gods in their own image, and those gods have proven false. He looked at the word-bearer. Narek sat, his face half in shadow, listening. Believe me, John said, I would help you if I could. I despise the ruinous powers more than all things. I would fight against any part of their influence. Narek stood up.
Then tell me, he whispered, what is your task? What is it that you must perform for your alien masters? What duty must you complete so you can be finished with your service and free to help me?
They want no less than you, Narek, said John. They want a Primarch dead. Narek grunted.
Whose life do they seek?
That of Vulcan, said John Grammaticus.
Why?
Their motives are too complex to explain easily, said John.
But Vulcan is here. He is here on the crag.
So I am informed. His arrival has been foreseen. He vanished by teleport into the ether more than a solar year ago and was presumed lost. But I understand that the strange properties of the Pharos have brought him here, across the void.
I care for none of that, human, said Narek. Nothing except my legion. Let us find Vulcan, slay him as you are bidden, then you can help me.
Oh, John sighed, if only it was as simple as that.
Explain.
I've been tracking his mind since I arrived on the crag, John said. Tracking him so I could find him, and I've learned that, well, Vulcan is mad. Utterly insane.
How? Asked Narek.
The best I can read it, he was tortured. Extensively and extravagantly over a long period of time. It has quite broken his mind. In his state, he is ridiculously dangerous.
So we will be cunning, said Narek.
That's not all, said John. It is possible to kill a Primarch. They are demigods, but they are still mortal to an extent. Enough firepower, venom, or explosive force... John looked straight at the word-bearer. There is a reason the Cabal armed me with this specific weapon to take down Vulcan. They know that he has a very particular, unique trait. He doesn't die.
What?
Like me, he is functionally immortal. He resurrects, even from the most catastrophic demise. To kill an entity like that, you need something really special. And that spear, Narek, of the word, is a ritual weapon, if ever there was one. Narek glanced down at the Fulgurite spear. It was lying on the top of the carry bag at his feet.
Oh, said John, and according to my instructions, I can't do the deed myself. I have to deliver the spear to another Primarch who is willing to strike the blow. He paused. So, word-bearer, I have to kill an unkillable, immortal demigod who has the power of 50 men and also happens to be violently insane. Do you still want a part of that? Vulcan screamed his anguish. He swung the mace. The sweep of it made the air howl. Kurz dodged the almost certainly lethal blow. He turned, bolted along the length of the roof slope, and leapt over a broad gap onto the green-tiled crest of the southern portico. Vulcan gave chase. The blood on his armour had already dried. The punctures that Kurz's claws had made in his torso had closed. The internal organs that had been shredded and torn were reforming. Vulcan cleared the gap as easily as Kurz had done and landed on the end of the portico's long roof. He arched his back and turned the mace in a huge one-handed rotation, launching it headfirst at the fleeing Kurz. Released, the mace flew like a missile. It struck Kurz high on the left shoulder and knocked him onto his face. He slithered down the slight incline of the roof. The mace crashed off the tiles beside him and slid to rest. Vulcan came bounding along the roof to reach his enemy. There were lights in the yard below, dancing stab lights that chased hard, bright beams up at the roofline. There was the chop and whicker of gunship engines. He closed on Kurz. Kurz struggled to rise. At the last second, as Vulcan's powerful hands grabbed at him, Kurz rolled over to face his brother. He had hold of the battle mace. He drove the weapon into the side of Vulcan's head. His jaw broke, teeth shattered audibly, blood squirted from his ear and nostril. Vulcan staggered backwards, but did not fall. Kurz came at him, pressing his advantage. He struck Vulcan twice more in the body with the stolen mace. Powerful lamps flooded them with white light. They became two silhouettes, trading blows in a colourless glare. Two ultramarines, storm eagles, engines howling, circled the portico roof, while dozens of others filled the skies over the fortress. One of them came in, almost at the level of the roofline, and sprayed two warning salvos of fire from its twin-linked heavy bolters. The grouped blasts blew out great sections of the portico roof directly behind Kurz. Flames, dust, and fragmented tiles erupted in all directions. Kurz, furious at the intervention, turned and shrieked directly into the lights of the Storm Eagle. The gunship had a confirmed lock on him, and its weapons blazed. In a huge bound that spread his cloak behind him like wings, Kurz leapt clean off the portico and landed on the hull of the Storm Eagle. Its engines immediately started to wail as it recoiled from the roofline. Its nose dipped as it turned out. Kurz clung on. He punched his right fist through the cockpit canopy and seized the human pilot serf by the throat, the blades of his claw encircling the man's collar. "Away from here!" he hissed over the screaming engines and streaming wind. The pilot looked at him, eyes wide, choking. "Now!" Kurz added. Unsteady, yawing badly to starboard, the Storm Eagle turned and began to move across the gate yard away from the residency. It was running at less than rooftop height. "Climb!" Kurz insisted over the headwind. "Climb!" The gunship began to gain altitude. Behind it, Vulcan braced himself and leapt too. He slammed onto the gunship's starboard tail wing on his belly and held on. The impact made the gunship sway laterally as it continued on its slow, advancing hover. Vox channels went wild. The squads of ultramarines in the Portis Yard and Residency Quadrangle started to fire in a free-for-all at the wavering gunship, realizing that it had to be sacrificed if Kurz was to be stopped. Bolt rounds and las bolts clipped and boomed off the Storm Eagle's armoured hull. Sparks leapt and shrapnel flew. Fireballs bloomed and left scorched patches on its armoured skin. Kurz looked down the hull of the Storm Eagle and saw Vulcan. The gunship's nose was coming up. It was approaching the line of the Aegis Wall. Kurz kept his hand clamped around the pilot, threatening to shear his head from his shoulders. Over, he said. Vulcan clawed his way up the wing over the starboard engine cowling. Kurz judged the weight of the mace in his free hand. He waited until Vulcan clambered clear of the cowling. Then he hurled the weapon with a vicious snap-sling of his arm. The mace's head struck Vulcan in the face. He lost his grip and flew sideways into the Storm Eagle's tail assembly, which he tried to grab hold of. He failed and fell off the gunship's stern. Vulcan plummeted about 30 meters. He neither landed on the yard inside the Aegis wall, nor fell the greater depth of the wall and castrum on the outside. Instead, he struck the top of the wall, smashing into the castellations with a force that broke his spine. Then he dropped limp and folded onto his side on the wall-top walkway, a bright mirror of blood leaking out of his shattered body, his life seemingly extinguished once more. The gunship, with Kurz clinging to its cockpit assembly, continued over the wall. Ferocious hails of gunfire chased it from the yards and wall-top. It slugged on. The castrum dropped away. Kurz was high over the city and the parkland. Down, he hissed. The pilot gurgled. He had been bleeding profusely since Kurz had first smashed the canopy in his face and seized his throat. The gunship began to bank towards the towers and spires of the city. Gunfire continued to track it from the walls and battlements. The second Storm Eagle, search lamps blazing, thundered over the Aegis wall in pursuit, taking a far more direct and aggressive path than its stricken twin. The other gunships aloft circled back to allow the Storm Eagle to take its kill. Kurz glanced back, the night wind lashing his hair, and saw it gaining. Down, he ordered. The Storm Eagle began to drop fast. The spires, city halls and residential citadel spires north of Marshall Square rose to meet it, their windows lit. Raid sirens were blaring down in the streets. Kurz could see the crisscross light streams of traffic in the streets below. Titan's Gate, immense and unlit, was a black henge, a silhouette against the distant bright radiance of the landing fields far to the south. Down! Kurz ordered again. They were lumbering low over the high tops of towers and domed vaults, or even between the bulk of the tallest spires. Their course was arching east of Marshall Square, swinging towards the high block shapes of the Treasury and the new Senate House. The Storm Eagle chasing them began to fire. Bright, heavy bolter fire spat orange darts through the night, shots that reflected off the high windows of the towers on either side of them. They found their mark. Parts of the tail assembly burst away in a shower of spalled metal and a gout of burning gases. The gunship that Kurz was riding lurched, its engines straining. They were losing height very fast, nearly smashing into the north face of the Consular Record Building. The starboard wingtip raked a flurry of squealing sparks off the building's stonework. Kurz had been watching his visions all the while, letting them play through his head like that damaged pict feed, sorting the true from the false, the trustworthy from the untrustworthy. His entire operation since planetfall had been guided and directed by his visions. Vulcan was the only part of it that his visions had not shown, nor even hinted at. He saw glass now, water, fire, a specific dome. More shots hit the diving Storm Eagle from behind. A greater chunk of it exploded and broke away. It fell rather than flew, no longer controllable, a chunk of mangled debris arcing like a meteor to impact, trailing fire and wreckage, 20 meters above the rooftops. Kurz saw the dome, the particular dome. He let go of the pilot's throat and jumped, falling away from the plunging gunship. Feet first, he hit the dome of the building, a great and ornate crystal canopy which shattered under him. Pinwheeling in a torrent of glittering fragments, he fell hard and hit water in a plume of spray. The Storm Eagle, leaving huge jumping yellow flames in its wake, continued on for another 5 seconds and struck the east facade of the Treasury Building, 15 meters above the street. It made a dazzling orange fireball that punched through the wall and incinerated the chambers within, and simultaneously spat back into the night sky, lofting and expanding and raining burning fuel and micro-debris. A nanosecond after impact, as the fireball was forming, the Storm Eagle's munitions payload went off, and a second, larger, brighter fireball engulfed the first, blooming like a small sun over the treasury yard. The orange glare was reflected in a million windows, except in the nearby streets where the blast blew all of the casements out. Kurz surfaced in a spray of water and shook his head. He was in the principal nympheum of Magna Macrag Civitas, a large circular building with columns supporting the famous crystal dome. It housed the oldest of the natural springs that had been worshipped in the days of the Battle Kings as sacred to the water spirits. Kurz thrashed to the edge of the stone pool and rose out of the water, letting it stream off him onto the flagstones. He glanced back at the spring-fed pool, polluted with fragments of smashed crystal. The clear water was stained. There was a fair measure of blood in it. Not all of it belonged to Kurz, not by any means. He smiled, a black crescent in the sloshing blue twilight of the nympheum. He walked towards the exit, towards a night-bound city lit by the fury of burning wreckage. Kurz understood cities at night. The secret was you either made them darker or you made them burn. He waited for the visions to show him where to go next and which of those things to do. Tetrarch Dolor strode along the walkway on top of the high Aegis wall, staring at the fireball blooming over the eastern Neapolis. The night sky was full of circling, beating gunships. Verus Caspian waited for him.
"Is that a kill?" Dolor asked.
"His escape vehicle was brought down east of the Marshall Square," said Caspian.
"Can we confirm his death?" Dolor asked.
"Not yet, Lord Tetrarch," replied Caspian. "Forces are on the ground. We're waiting for word."
"I want a body," said Dolor. "Preferably one I can spit on. Burned bones, at least."
"Yes, Lord Tetrarch."
"Less with the Lord Tetrarch, my noble and good friend Verus," said Dolor. He looked Caspian in the eye. "Phraetus has fallen. Until the Avenging Sun can be found, I have authority in the fortress, and I directly name you First Master to succeed Augustine."
"My lord,
we must surely maintain and reinforce the chain of command in this black hour, Verus," said Dolor. "You will perform the duty in superlative fashion."
"Thank you, Tetrarch," said Caspian, saluting and bowing.
"We will know no fear, First Master Caspian," replied Dolor, saluting back. "Make your respect known."
The ultramarines around them clattered out brisk salutes.
"Will we know no fear, Valentus?" Caspian asked. "This knight may have seen the violent death in the space of one full hour of four of the Emperor's sons."
"These bold and dread facts are yet to be confirmed," replied Dolor.
"One might be," Caspian replied. He led the Tetrarch along the defensive platform to a section of the battlement that was wet with blood. Ultramarines stood all around, their heads bowed. Vulcan lay in a broken heap on the walkway, surrounded by a wide slick of his lifeblood. "In the spirit of our brothers, the Salamanders," said Caspian, "Vulcan lived, but he does so no longer." Dolor was about to reply when the vital sensors of every man in the vicinity, including his own, went off. They all had been set to maximum yield earlier that evening in the hopes of detecting the Night Haunter as he hunted through the dark. A brand new life trace had been detected within 5 meters of them. "Great terror!" Caspian exclaimed. Vulcan sat up in the pool of blood. He gazed at them, his eyes like the hearts of red suns.
"My lord," said Dolor, taking a step forward. "My honoured Lord Vulcan, we—"
Vulcan ignored him and got up. He took several deep breaths as if scenting the air and gazed over the lip of the Aegis wall towards the hot fire burning in the treasury quarter.
"My lord," Dolor urged, "will you speak to us? Will you tell us where you have been, what has befallen you, and how you come to us? My lord, I..."
Vulcan didn't look back. He jumped onto the rampart of the Aegis wall, spread his arms wide, and stepped off. He fell, magnificent, like a cliff diver, head first into the dark green space of the parkland below the castrum.